Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
John Gonzalez from The Ringer joins us here on CBS Sports Radio. How you doing, Gonzo?
Jody, how are things?
Good. Appreciate you coming on for a couple of minutes. Am I to guess by the timing of today's appearance that you are not headed over to the Staples Center for Sixers-Clippers?
I'm not going to make it to Sixers-Clippers. I'll probably make Sixers-Lakers.
Okay. All right. You got stuff to do. When the wife's away, the cat gets to play. What the hell are you doing sitting at home talking to me when you go see the Sixers?
That's the best way to spend my Sunday. You know, it's Sunday, and God rested on the 7th, and I'm spending it with you.
That's a sad testament to your life at this stage. When does the wife get home from Indianapolis?
She's back from Indy tomorrow, yeah. Okay. She's been there all week.
All right. And done a fine job. I've sung her praises, and her running mates there on the NFL Network, I think they've done a heck of a job with the combine. But, again, too much combine talk from the first. I want to talk NBA with you here. Before we get into today's NBA, I do want to take you back a couple of years ago. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you had already moved from Philly to L.A. by the year of the Markelle Fultz, Lonzo Ball, Jason Tatum draft, correct?
That is correct, yes.
And I remember you writing a couple articles leading up to the draft, specifically from an L.A. position because you're out there in L.A., correct?
Yeah, I was at Lonzo Ball's workouts, and then when he got drafted by the Lakers, I was there for his initial press conference and covered his whole beginning of his career with the Lakers.
All right, so I'm going to ask you to take your memory back there because Markelle Fultz became a topic of conversation in Philadelphia again this week because somebody from Bleacher Report wrote a story about how he was so maligned and mistreated in Philadelphia, which is just not accurate. I know I was there. If anything, they were overly biased to believing in Markelle Fultz because they believed in the process and he was part of the process. And the guy just couldn't play and had issues, be they physical or not, but he couldn't do it. And whenever he did play, if he ever made a play, the crowd would go nuts. So to say he was mistreated in Philadelphia is just a mischaracterization. But it has brought back the whole Jason Tatum could have been a Sixer conversation because Tatum is going nuts, playing phenomenal for the Celtics. And I always say I don't really believe that's the case. That if the Celtics hadn't been able to do the deal with the Sixers, that they just would have taken Jason Tatum number one. Now, the Sixers would have probably taken Markelle Fultz at three anyway, but that's assuming the Lakers wouldn't have. What is your best memory of the behind-the-scenes negotiating and untold stories of how that draft played out? We know Danny Ainge got his guy and got picks on top of it, so he was a winner. The Sixers got Markelle Fultz, so they were a loser. Were the Lakers ever anything other than going to be Lonzo Ball's new home? Could they have gone a different direction if the draft had gone differently in front of them?
I think your recollection, your inclination here is right. Your reading of the situation feels like what I knew at the time and what we've since uncovered and learned. I think you're absolutely right that the Boston Celtics and Danny Ainge ate Brian Colangelo's lunch for him and took those picks for a guy that they probably would have just taken anyway. I think Tatum would be absolutely phenomenal for the Sixers had it unfolded that way. I just don't think that there was any chance of that happening. And then similarly, Lonzo to the Lakers, by all accounts, was a lock at two. I mean, Magic Johnson really liked him. Afterwards, obviously, he fell out of favor with Magic, but Magic Johnson really liked him. He's an L.A. guy. He was, his dad was trying to speak into existence, his son going to the Lakers, which is exactly what happened. And then, Markelle ended up with the Sixers, but they had to pay a premium for a guy that they probably would have ended up just getting at three anyway. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think that that's the way that it went down. And, kudos to Danny Ainge. I had talked to a longtime NBA executive afterwards about that whole, the way that whole thing happened, and you know, who do you think won the deal? And this was before we knew that Markel had shoulder issues and maybe some other things going on with him. And he said, look, if we're talking about two guys sitting down at a poker table and one of them is Danny Ainge and the other guy is Brian Colangelo, I'm going to bet on Danny Ainge. And that turned out to be right.
That's exactly the way it played out. So you're telling me if Markel Fultz was still available, Tatum comes off the board one, there's no way the Lakers take him instead and pass on Ball?
I don't think so. I mean, it definitely felt like here on the ground at the time, all the talk was about Lonzo to the Lakers. So I would have been really surprised if that happened.
Was Magic the driving force for that pick at that time?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Magic, I mean, Magic as a, you know, obviously as a an all-time point guard, and, you know, he had brought in Lonzo's dad, LeVar, and there were multiple conversations, and he was such a big figure. Lonzo was here in Los Angeles, not just because he played his high school ball here, but also obviously because he played at UCLA, and just like all the talk all the time was about Lonzo in Los Angeles. Everybody else was talking about Markel Fultz and Jason Tatum and what the Sixers and the Celtics were doing. In Los Angeles, there was only one topic, and that was Lonzo.
John Gonzalez of The Ringer, NBA writer here with us on CBS Sports Radio. All right, Philly comes into L.A. today, have to take on the Clippers. Clippers had lost three in a row. Now they've won three in a row. They seem to be kicking into the gear at just the right time. Bad place for the Sixers to be signs Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons today, huh?
Yeah, it's one of those seasons, isn't it, Jody, where nothing seems to be going right for them. In addition to, you know, you've got a back issue with Ben Simmons, and then you've got a shoulder problem with Embiid, and then they haven't been playing well all season long, and they haven't been healthy, and they haven't had their starting lineup together for much. And then on top of that, yeah, now the schedule is conspiring against them. So the Clippers are starting to play better. I won't say well, but they're starting to play better at a time when they really needed to, because I think Doc and Kawhi and those guys were starting to get a little nervous about what that team could be and whether or not they were sort of running out of enough runway here to ramp up the season and start looking like the contenders that we expected them to be all year. But they're doing that at just the right time, and the Sixers are heading the other direction.
Right, and any team, if you've got a team in the NBA that's got two all-star players, which the Sixers do, and they're both out of the lineup at the same time, well, you're just not going to be able to compete with the really good teams. But they can't compete with anybody on the road. They're 28-2 at home. They're 9-20 on the road. So this, you say the schedule is conspiring against them. Well, the schedule is 41 home games and 41 road games. That, when they come up, yes, can be a conspiring, but they pretty much break it up right down the middle. How do you explain those two splits?
I can't. I was hoping you would explain it to me, because I think the Sixers would take anybody's advice at this point on why they've been so abysmal on the road. It's really, I'd like to say it's inexplicable. I don't get it, Jody. I mean, like, they have obviously a home court advantage in that they have a rabid crowd, and Philadelphia has always been a very difficult place to play, and they feel more comfortable there, obviously. But, you know, when they go on the road, and the wheels just absolutely come off for these guys. I don't know what it is. I don't know if they're trying to do too much or they're taking it too lightly. I know that when they played that game in Milwaukee, what, a week ago or so, there was those photos of Embiid out at the casino, very Allen Iverson-like, the night before. Maybe he needed to blow off a little steam. I don't know what it is. I don't know what their travel habits are like. I'm not on the road with them, but maybe they're gripping the wheel a little too tight, or maybe the opposite is true. Who knows?
All right, they still got 20 games to go, and they're going to finish where they finish in the East. Don't know where that's going to be. Could be as high as 4, could be as low as 6. I don't think it's getting any higher than 4, and I don't think they're dropping down any lower than 6. And then the first-round matchup, we have to see who they face. If they get beat in the first round, even with these injuries factored in, I'm assuming Embiid is going to be back. I'm hoping that Ben Simmons is going to be back. Don't know what level they're coming back at, but let's say they have their two all-stars back by the start of the playoffs, but could be somewhat handicapped because they don't get much game run in again before the real season starts, a.k.a. the postseason. Is Brett Brown a dead coach walking if the Sixers can't get out of the first round?
I fear that's the case, yeah. I mean, you and I have talked about this. I am unapologetic about my love for Brett Brown. I think he's a good coach. I think it's hard to evaluate coaches, and they get a tougher rap then maybe they should in certain circumstances. There are guys who are elite, a very handful of, you know, Steve Kerrs and Spoelstra and Brad Stevens and, you know, like a couple of guys who are at the very tip top and then a couple of guys who are at the bottom who couldn't coach their way out of a paper bag. And then I think everybody else is in the middle who are, you know, mostly largely fine and who are stewards. And I think Brett is somewhere in that middle group, middle to top group. But, yeah, you're looking at if it's a first-round out, people are going to – you know Philadelphia as well as anybody. People are going to look for somebody to blame. They were looking for somebody to blame last year, and only by the virtue of going seven games against the eventual world champion Toronto Raptors and losing in a freak four-bounce, you know, historic shot by Kawhi, that saved him. But I thought if not for that, he might have been a casualty last year, and it's unfortunate, but I think that that's probably the way it goes. Unless they go on a really deep run here, I'd be surprised if they didn't make a change.
All right. You did run down some rankings of some coaches. That lends me to another question. Read an article, I think it was on SB Nation, about the Sixers being potentially the biggest disappointment in the league this year. And I said, oh, wait a minute. Hold on. They're going to make the playoffs. But then I started looking around and comparing other teams and expectations and the like. And the guy's actually got a point that if they do get bounced in the first round, some people had them as the favorite in the East and ticketed to go to an NBA final. You get bounced in the first round, I'm sorry, that's a massive disappointment. And the only other team I could come up with that could be put in that same category is the Spurs, who nobody was talking about making an NBA final, but you just immediately assume the Spurs are in the playoffs because they've only been there every year for the last two decades. And they're not going to make it this year. And they're coached by one of the NBA's all-time greatest coaches. What do you think Popovich is going to do during this offseason?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I put maybe the Portland Trailblazers in that same disappointing conversation, too. But, yeah, San Antonio has, what, a streak of – I think if they make it this year, it would be the all-time consecutive playoff streak. They've set it. I know they're tied right now. It's like 22 or 23 straight years. They are, as we talk right now, three games back of the surprisingly good Memphis Grizzlies for that final spot in the Western Conference. But Pop has talked about, you know, at some point, there's going to have to be an end to this run, right? I mean, he's coaching USA Basketball, and he's been with the Spurs he's been the head coach since, what, like 98, something like that. So it's been more than 20 years. And at some point, you would expect that he has nothing else to prove. So maybe he wants to go off and he likes to drink wine and have nice dinners, and maybe that's what he wants to do after USA Basketball. But I hope he doesn't go, because for all the times that he can be prickly with the media and gruff, he's also a delight. I mean, there are times when you get him to open up about various topics where he's just fantastic, and he's super well respected in the coaching fraternity and also by the players. So it'd be a bummer to see him go.
All right, I discussed this yesterday on the show, and just because you said USA Basketball, it reminded me that I got to ask you this question, too. If a percentage, and it could be as low as 1 of 12, or it could be 12 of 12, or it could be somewhere in the middle, a percentage of the Team USA players that are supposed to head to the Olympics to take on whatever teams they draw in the upcoming Olympic Games decide, you know, the whole coronavirus scare, it's just not worth the risk for us. Family, rest of their career, salary, branding, whatever you want to lay it off on, that a whole bunch or maybe just one guy decide, no, I'm going to take a pass. How would you look at that as an NBA writer, an NBA fan, an NBA analyst? Understandable, questionable, ridiculously bad if some are going and some decide not to. If there is a defection of a percentage of Team USA in the Olympics because of a scare from the coronavirus, what would you say?
Wouldn't surprise me. I mean, there are all kinds of different reasons why guys duck out on the Olympics. The NBA season, Jody, is so long now. I mean, there's so, like, it's 2 months of playoffs alone. So by the time they get done, if some of these guys are deep into the playoffs, there's really no rest for them. It would be like playing a full calendar year of basketball without any time off. So if they blame it on that, or they blame it on rest, or they blame it on marketing opportunities that they need to seize upon, there's always excuses for guys to beg off. And It wouldn't surprise me if somebody says that, oh, you know, it's coronavirus, when really they just want to get a little R&R. But also, I mean, last time I checked, I'm pretty sure that the International Olympic Committee was saying that they had a window here where in the next like month or so they had to decide if the games were going to be held there, if they were going to move it to an alternate site, period. So I think it's not just maybe basketball players and Team USA that are considering. It might be even, you know, the entire International Olympic Federation that's considering what they're going to do here.
Yeah, a whole bunch of things can shake out between now and then. All right, something's going to shake out here in the next 20 minutes. You got to turn the wife off TV, and you got to turn on the Clippers and the 76ers. What is the gonzo repast with the wife out of town and you just kicking back, relaxing, watching hoops on TV?
Yeah, me and the dogs, we're gonna see if the Sixers can get a road win here. But like you said, highly unlikely, Jody. They've been so bad. We'll see. We'll put our feet up and we'll see if we can get the Sixers across the
table. Now, I should know this, and I don't. Shame on me. You might. I'll ask you. You know what the spread is on today's game?
That's a great question. I have no idea.
They got to be double-digit dogs, don't they?
I mean,
no Embiid, no Simmons at Staples. Sixers can't win a road game for their life. It's got to be 10+.
You would think. You would think it's the odds are against them for sure, whatever the odds are.
Damn. All right, so what are you eating at the house?
You're getting a little pizza, I think.
Okay.
Maybe a pizza day. Pizza.
What do you get on your pizza? Is L.A. pizza different than Philadelphia pizza? Do you change your toppings from coast to coast?
No. I got a spot here that's like East Coast style pizza. It's hard to find a good, like, normal human pizza because there's a lot of bougie, like, crunchy granola California-style pizzas here. But there's a place called Vito's that they call it East Coast Jersey-style pizza. It's pretty good, close approximation to the pizza we get back home.
I can't see you doing granola pizza, Gonzo. That's not happening. Always a pleasure, brother. We shall talk. Thanks much. Tell the better half I said hi.
Will do, Jody. You're the best. Thanks, buddy.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.